Support for Alaska Public Media On Demand comes from SIRI, an Alaska Native corporation with operations and investments spanning 5 continents, 45 states, and 2 U.S. territories.
Do we want more Navy ships, more Marines, or more IRS agents during this very dangerous time?
Senator Dan Sullivan argues for more military spending amid a looming federal debt default. From Alaska Public Media, this is Statewide News on Alaska News Nightly for Thursday, June 1st. Good evening, I'm Casey Grove. Also tonight, the Anchorage Airport has become the third busiest cargo airport in the world.
By stopping here, less gas, more cargo. So they really maximize the amount of cargo that's available in the aircraft by using Anchorage, Alaska.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
Alaska is growing quickly, so construction jobs are in high demand. 1 in 20 jobs in Alaska are in construction, and with the industry expanding every year, Alaska needs a bigger workforce. The University of Alaska system offers accessible construction management programs, giving students the skills they need to empower Alaska. Learn more at empower.alaska.edu. This message sponsored by the University of Alaska.
A bill to avoid default on the federal debt stalled for a few hours today when a group of U.S. senators, including Alaska's Dan Sullivan, argued the bipartisan agreement does not spend enough on the military. Sullivan says these are dangerous times.
Authoritarian dictators with immense appetite for conquest are on the march. And yet, what does this budget agreement do? It cuts defense spending significantly.
The agreement would increase next year's defense spending by 3.3%, which is below the level of inflation. Sullivan was in a group of 6 Republican senators who took to the Senate floor today to argue the defense spending level was inadequate. Sullivan said he would try to amend the bill by moving $18 billion from the Internal Revenue Service to the Pentagon.
Do we want more Navy ships, more Marines, or more IRS agents during this very dangerous time? I think the answer is pretty clear.
The compromise bill the House passed yesterday would already cut into the funding boost Congress gave the IRS last year. The Biden administration says the agency needs the money to modernize and crack down on wealthy tax cheats. The Senate appears poised to pass the debt limit bill tonight. Any amendments would send the bill back to the House. The Treasury says it will reach the debt ceiling Monday. Unless Congress passes a bill to raise it, the government would run out of money to fully fund Medicare, Social Security, and payments to veterans, among other obligations. The state of Alaska is proceeding with plans to limit transgender students' ability to participate in sports and activities. The Alaska Beacon reports that on June 8th, the State Board of Education will consider a regulation that would bar transgender student athletes from participating in school sports and activities under their gender identity. It would limit students to either multi-gender sports teams or, quote, a separate team for each sex with participation based on a student's sex assigned at birth, end quote. The board's decision is unlikely to be final. The board will only be voting on whether or not to advance the proposal to a 30-day public comment period. For the past 3 years, the Alaska legislature has failed to pass a bill that would set statewide policy on the topic. Current rules in place by the Alaska School Activities Association, in charge of regulating school sports in the state, allow individual districts to set policies. Federal investigators are looking into the business dealings of an Anchorage woman whose charity the city gave $1.6 million during the coronavirus pandemic to help people experiencing homelessness or addiction. That's according to reporting by the Anchorage Daily News and ProPublica, who found the city gave one of its biggest pandemic relief grants to Rosalina Magaeva's nonprofit House of Transformations, despite the state having investigated Magaeva for alleged fraud and permanently banning her from serving as a Medicaid provider years earlier. Anchorage Daily News reporter Kyle Hopkins wrote about all of this recently and joins us now. Kyle, first, what is House of Transformations? Where did it come from and what was it supposed to do?
House of Transformations is a charity that is a place where you can go and stay, you know, after you get out of jail or are waiting trial. It's, you know, it's basically a halfway house, but also, you know, more than that, a place where you can theoretically get substance abuse treatment. You can go into rehab. You can, you know, get hooked up with like job training opportunities. You know, imagine it's 2020. There's this new nonprofit that starts up. And, you know, pretty soon there's just a wave of money, of federal relief money that comes along to help businesses and nonprofits grapple with, you know, trying to survive the pandemic. And in 2021, the city had a first round of like $50 million to hand out. And so House of Transformations, along with many other local charities and nonprofits, they asked for some of that money. And they received $1.6 million from the city as part of what's called ARPA, you know, the American Rescue Act.
So Rosalina Magaeva founded House of Transformations, so she's obviously a central figure here. Who is she, though, and what's the story with those earlier Medicaid fraud allegations?
Well, this was not someone who I was familiar with at all, really. I had been doing some reporting back in March on the Anchorage Equal Rights Commission because there were lots of complaints being made by city employees. We've talked about this before, but, you know, by city employees who were alleging all kinds of things happening within City Hall. And one of the agencies that's supposed to investigate like discrimination within the city was the Anchorage Equal Rights Commission. And then I was trying to get familiar with their new commissioners. And so, and Rosalina was one of the new commissioners appointed by Mayor Bronson. At the time, if you had Googled her, one of the first things that comes up is this permanent ban by the state of Alaska, because she had another company called A Loving Care, and that provided like home personal assistance. So that business and then Maviaga herself were banned by the state from serving as Medicaid providers, which is, you know, a pretty drastic punishment from the state. And she actually was formally criminally charged, but they ended up going the administrative route and banning her and her corporation from serving as Medicaid providers. And I didn't mention it in stories at the time because it felt like tangential and not super important to discussing why the investigators weren't closing cases, and didn't come up again until more recently when I learned that she's now under federal investigation once again.
Yeah. And so how do you know that they're under investigation? Because we haven't seen an indictment or some charges come out, but I understand folks are talking about that.
Yeah. And to be fair, I mean, we often hear people are under investigation and are unable to land stories about it. You know, the feds, they investigate. They investigate lots of things. You know, they often don't lead to indictments. But in this case, we knew that, for example, I'd spoken to a business owner who had been approached by a Treasury Department investigator and maybe someone from the Small Business Administration. And remember, the Small Business Administration gave out the PPP loans, and they were asking questions about Bitcoin investments and about these kind of nesting, what I've referred to as nesting dolls of nonprofits, because you have Maviaga, who owns House of Transformations, but then House of Transformations, you know, either the nonprofit version or a for-profit version might own a bunch of other corporations, right? So the investigators were, frankly, they've talked to a lot of people as part of this investigation. So I think it was probably hard to keep it secret. You know, two things allowed me, in my opinion, to report the story. One was I went to House of Transformations and they just basically said, yeah, we're being investigated. I mean, they kind of admitted to the investigation. And the other element was eventually the city just said, okay, here's what we've been asked about. You know, we have heard from the feds. They are asking questions, and here are the corporations and entities they're asking about.
Do we know what they're under investigation for?
I think it would be risky to kind of guess at what they're under investigation for exactly. I mean, we know that the feds are asking about the federal money that they received. The federal investigators are asking for things like the applications that they submitted, you know, saying, here's what we're going to do with those grants. You know, so I imagine they'd be looking at, well, you know, what was that money used for, right?
Obviously, a big part of this story is whether the city, and I guess in this case, we're talking the Anchorage Assembly, you know, properly vetted this nonprofit and, you know, its founder. So what does either, I guess, you know, the mayor's office or the Anchorage Assembly have to say about that?
Yeah, I mean, what struck me was just, it just seemed like it would come up. It just seemed like it would come up. You know, if you're going to give $1 million plus to somebody that you would, like the thing I was telling my editor was like, you know, you would imagine that like the state or the city would vet someone, you know, to the degree that like somebody who's like vetting their first Tinder date would, you know, that they would probably Google, you know, they would like Google the name, might look at CourtView, you know, and like, and that we called it like the, you know, the Tinder threshold. Like, did they do like that amount of like vetting? And it does not seem like it. Or if they did, they sure didn't ask about it, right? Which is maybe even kind of raises even more questions. Let's see. Rivera was the chair at the time, I think. And he said, well, the assembly doesn't have the budget for an investigator.
And that's Felix Rivera, the assembly chair
yeah.
at the time. Yeah.
But I don't know. I mean, they seem perfectly capable of Googling things. So, you know, it does seem like the kind of thing that maybe should be addressed in policy, like some type of formal policy.
So there was a lot of federal money flowing into the state, as you noted in the story, you know, during the pandemic and for pandemic relief. Is your sense that this is, you know, one of maybe other groups that we're going to find out in the future either wasn't vetted properly or came under investigation?
Absolutely. I think, you know, I think the ARPA funding was a beacon for fraud nationwide. You know, I think that's been shown. And now we're seeing examples of questions being raised about how that money was allocated, you know, who it was given to and what they did with it in Alaska. And, you know, frankly, with this type of reporting, you know, I feel like I'm just kind of getting started looking at, okay, where is the federal money going? Because anytime you scratch in one direction or another, it just doesn't take long to kind of come across something that just really raises a lot of questions. So I think there's a lot more to be known in that arena.
All right, we will stay tuned. You can read the full story at ADN.com. That was Anchorage Daily News reporter Kyle Hopkins. Kyle, thanks for being here.
Of course, anytime.
Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, a Petersburg rapper incorporates his commercial fishing background into his lyrics.
Fishing every day, you know he's spending the time. It's not really working unless you're on the grind. I got the net coming in and it's full of fish. Big money, yo, it's all we wish.
More of that coming up. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
You know that eating fruits and vegetables supports good health. But did you also know that frozen and canned produce offers the same health benefits as fresh? It's true. Whether fresh, frozen, canned, or from the land, eating fruits and veggies can lead to a long and healthy life. So when it comes to getting the fruits and veggies you need to stay healthy, remember, every bite counts. This message sponsored by Snap.
An Anchorage jury has found a Washington man guilty in the 2017 killing of his friend and romantic partner, a prominent Ketchikan surgeon. 38-year-old Jordan Joplin was found guilty of first and second degree murder and first degree theft. Ketchikan police found 58-year-old Dr. Eric Garcia dead at his home in March of 2017. State prosecutors said Garcia died from a fatal dose of morphine and that Joplin tried to ship about 4,000 pounds of Garcia's belongings to Washington. An assistant attorney general said Joplin had been in a romantic relationship with Garcia for 6 years before the surgeon died. Joplin's sentencing is set for October 5th. A former Wasilla teacher who admitted to sexually abusing 11 children has been sentenced to more than four decades behind bars. 40-year-old Lucas Neiswanger taught third and fourth grade and was an athletics coach at Iditarod Elementary School. He received the BP Teacher of Excellence Award in 2015. One family's report that Neiswanger had inappropriately touched their child led to an investigation and eventually 10 other victims. A lawsuit that's still playing out in court alleges school officials and the Matanuska Susitna Borough School District failed to protect students after earlier reports of Neiswanger's inappropriate touching. Police arrested Neiswanger in 2018, and he pleaded guilty in 2022. A judge on Monday sentenced Neiswanger to 46 years in prison with another 40 years of suspended time, according to the State Department of Law. The lawsuit against Neiswanger, school officials, and the school district is set to go to trial in mid-June. Of the 11 victims listed in the civil suit, it appears the families of eight have reached settlements with the school district, a teacher, and a principal. Anchorage International Airport is the third busiest cargo airport in the world. Cargo demand eased coming out of the pandemic, but Alaska's position halfway between the major shipping hubs has provided a steady stream of traffic. Several carriers are looking to expand their airport operations, which could bring new manufacturing opportunities, but only if the businesses have a good grasp on geography. Alaska Public Media's Michael Finelli has the story.
So, we are here.
In a corner office overlooking a runway at Anchorage International, Airport Director Craig Campbell grabs a decorative globe from his desk to use as a visual aid.
And the most of the traffic in the U.S. goes here. Chicago, New York, Atlanta, Dallas. Asia's over here, right? Japan and China, we're getting a lot of China stuff. If you fly,
Campbell explains that Anchorage is conveniently located halfway between those major exporters in Asia and importers in the lower 48. So in order to carry as much valuable merchandise as possible, the freighters leave space in their gas tanks and make a pit stop in Alaska.
So if you put a lot of gas in to fly from Asia all the way to Chicago, that's heavier weight in gas, less cargo. So by stopping here, less gas, more cargo. So they really maximize the amount of cargo that's available in the aircraft by using Anchorage, Alaska.
International cargo demand is softening after the pandemic boom. But Campbell says, thanks to our geographic advantage, Anchorage traffic is down far less than other airports. That has allowed operations and employment opportunities to continue expanding. Ted Stevens Airport now accounts for 1 out of 7 jobs in Anchorage, according to a study by the Anchorage Economic Development Corporation. And Campbell says proposed new developments could push that number even higher. For example, Campbell says an agreement hasn't been finalized, but FedEx wants to build a regional hub to focus solely on shipping packages throughout Alaska.
So that's going to be new and developing over the next couple of years, which shows that we are increasing. The airport's increasing, the activity's increasing, air freight, especially for Alaska, in rural Alaska, is still very, very important, and it's recognized by the industry.
But how much air cargo potential is there in a small city in the far north? Darren Prokop is a logistics professor at the University of Alaska Anchorage and says the potential growth of Alaska air cargo is limited by the kinds of goods the state exports.
We have a lot of cargo that is either transiting through, some of it is coming off, but we don't have much cargo originating in Alaska.
That's because air cargo tends to consist of fragile, high-value goods, like pharmaceuticals and computer chips, he says. Alaska mostly exports bulk natural resources, like oil and minerals, that are shipped out on barges.
When we think of Alaska shipping things, we think of bulk, we think of mining, we think of bulk seafood, we think of lumber. We don't think of things that typically go on air cargo planes.
One airport proposal could start to shift that dynamic, though. Alaska Cargo and Cold Storage plans to build a warehouse next to the runway with refrigerated storage facilities, the first of its kind at Ted Stevens International. That means more fresh salmon could be shipped to restaurants in the lower 48. It might also heighten demand for Alaska peonies, the only place in the world the popular flower is available during summer months. But Prokop says beyond that, Alaska would need to start manufacturing one of those high-value products in order to realize its air cargo potential.
Should we do part of value-added manufacturing of semiconductors, of computers, for example? So it's a real puzzle. What is that right product that makes sense that we could do in Alaska and it's conducive to get on air cargo?
Growing cargo facilities could entice new businesses to set up shop here, but only if they understand Anchorage's place in the world. Prokop says the shortest distance between Asia and the U.S. is actually up and through Alaska, because the Earth is round.
People are used to looking at wall maps, not globes. Ted Stevens Airport needs to explain to manufacturers the Earth is round. A lot of your products are coming through Alaska. Maybe you want to be here.
Alaska is really more of a central locale than a remote one, he explains. You just might need to go grab a toy globe to see that. In Anchorage, I'm Michael Finelli.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
Alaska is growing quickly, so construction jobs are in high demand. 1 in 20 jobs in Alaska are in construction, and with the industry expanding every year, Alaska needs a bigger workforce. The University of Alaska system offers accessible construction management programs, giving students the skills they need to empower Alaska. Learn more at empower.alaska.edu. This message sponsored by the University of Alaska.
Local sponsors do right by their business and for the community by supporting public media stations. Thank you for considering adding your corporate support. You'll be in good company.
The 750-mile race to Alaska starts Monday, and intrepid competitors are pouring into Port Townsend, Washington to enjoy their last few days on land. As KRBD's Reagan Miller reports, there's a number of fan-favorite teams coming back for another shot at glory, and of course, some steak knives.
The idea is simple, but the race is not. No motors, no engines, and 750 miles from Port Townsend to Ketchikan, tagging Victoria, British Columbia along the way.
Currently, the weather forecast is looking relatively tame for the start of the race, but that can change in a heartbeat.
That's Jesse Weigel. He's the race boss. Weigel says about 3 of the 39 registered vessels have arrived at the start line, and the rest are expected over the weekend. The idea is described like this on the race's website, quote, "It's like the Iditarod on a boat with a chance of drowning, being run down by a freighter, or eaten by a grizzly bear." As far as what they'll face on the water, Weigel isn't sure. He says it's part of the draw.
Funny thing about Race to Alaska is we planted right here in June just because it's hard to tell what the weather's going to do. It could be a shake-and-bake kind of slow sit in the sun and pedal your way to Alaska, or we could have gales and wind advisories and all sorts of things.
But that won't be news to about 30% of the racers, who are what Weigel calls repeat customers. They've done the race before, and they're doing it again this year. That includes Team Madame Oracle and the Porch Prairie Pirates.
They've been doing the race human-powered for several years. This team, they've put together a sailing team. They're going to take it easy on a sailboat this year.
There's also Team Zen Again Dog, a one-man crew from England taking on the race in a kayak. And there's Team Lillian's Vacation, a one-woman show home-ported in Port Angeles. There aren't any teams hailing from Ketchikan this year, but there are teams from across the country, Australia, the United Kingdom, and Canada. First place prize is $10,000, but Weigel says the runner-up prize is the real star of the show.
The $10,000 for first place, that's chump change. Really, what you're after is a steak knife.
The race is separated in courses. The proving ground is from Port Townsend to Victoria, roughly 40 miles. The second leg is nicknamed the Bitter End and takes a team all the way to Ketchikan, the other 710 miles. Some teams will do just the first leg. Others will go all the way. Some won't finish. It's a lot easier for the fans. Once the race has started, teams can be tracked online. In Ketchikan, I'm Reagan Miller.
In mid-May, the small island community of Petersburg celebrated its ties to Norwegian culture as well as the start of the fishing season. Visiting musicians flew in for the town's Little Norway Festival, but they also shared the stage with some homegrown talent. Ashon McKay, who performs under the name Lil Realist X, is a Petersburg-based fisherman and rap musician. And sometimes he even raps about fishing. KFSK's Shelby Herbert reports.
It's the night of Lil Realist X's first show of the year, and local watering hole Keto's Cave is packed, from the stage to the very back of the bar. Lil Realist superfans are all sitting up front. Shirley Yip is one of them, and she's decked out in his merch. She, along with many others at her front stage table, knew Ashon from childhood. Yip says she got an iTunes gift card as a high school graduation present, and she remembers using it to buy his very first album.
I remember he would do some of his recordings in his GarageBand on his like MacBook Pro, and we got to hear the GarageBand versions of his music.
Dalton Small is another Realist fan. He remembers when Ashon started rapping in middle school.
From what I hear, it's done nothing but go up, so that's really cool to see. And you hear some of his old stuff compared to his stuff now, and it's just like, wow, it's gotten great. It's done good. He's nothing but the chillest guy you'll ever meet, and down to earth, and always down to have a good time, hang out with your friends kind of guy. Yeah, so.
After his set, Realist hops off the stage, sweaty and energized.
Feel good. It's a good show. Sweaty, so worked hard.
But this isn't his first rodeo. When he's not fishing himself, Realist is producing his music across the U.S., from Atlanta to Hollywood. Realist started rapping when he was about 12 years old. He says the rap icons of the early 2000s helped shape his sound.
Probably, Eminem, 50 Cent, Lil Wayne. Lil Realist X, that's my stage name. And I got that from one of 50 Cent songs. He said in a lyric, "Remind me that you're rocking with the Realist." And he was like such a big influence on my life. So I was like, oh, I'm going to use that. So Lil Realist and then X is just me finding myself.
Realist says growing up in Alaska also had a major impact on his art. He was born in Atlanta, Georgia, and adopted by a family in Petersburg when he was 6 months old.
I mean, you don't really know any different until you, like, go down south. But, I mean, we were driving four-wheelers on the roads, snowmobiles, a bunch of crazy stuff. A lot of snow, you know, not the big city stuff you normally do.
His parents started taking him out fishing when he was 8 years old, and he got his first full-time gig when he was 15. He lists the fishing industry as another major artistic influence.
Fishing every day, you know, he's spending the time. It's not really working unless you're on the grind. I got the net coming in and it's full of fish. Big money, yo, it's all we wish. We don't want big waves because it sinks the boat. Wait.
But Realist is stepping out of the grind and setting aside his nets for now. He got hurt in a fishing accident earlier this year. He was working with herring pounds, huge pens for holding the fish when they spawn.
We are herring pounding in Craig, Alaska, and we were setting the pounds on the beach. And I went up and jumped in the air and tried to twist one, but my spine twisted too far forward, and I crushed two discs.
For now, he's taking a break from fishing. But, Realist says, he's come to understand that the lifestyle is a critical part of his artistic persona. He says rapping about his roots sets him apart from other artists, and it keeps him grounded in reality.
Growing up, and you know, the older I get, the more I'm actually like feeling comfortable on presenting about life instead of just, you know, because you see everybody in the mainstream, it's like parties, big houses, and I don't got that. So it's more just like being real.
Realist says the recovery period is giving him more time to focus on his music. He's trying to set up tours in Washington and Montana and looks forward to producing his next album in Detroit. In Petersburg, I'm Shelby Herbert.
Big money, yo, it's all we wish. You don't want big waves because it sinks the boat. Wait, we got to fill up another tote. Halibut prices might go down, but I'm still going to fish at a P-town.
And that is all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at alaskapublic.org and wherever you get your podcasts. We had reports tonight from Liz Ruskin in Anchorage, Reagan Miller in Ketchikan, Michael Finelli also in Anchorage, and Shelby Herbert in Petersburg. If you want to send us a news tip, question, or comment, email us at news@alaskapublic.org. Our audio engineer is Chris Hyde, Tim Rocky is our producer, and I'm Casey Grove. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible in part by your local public radio station. If you would like to play an integral part in what you're listening to, public media is designed for and made possible by the communities it serves. If you are already a member or corporate sponsor, thank you. If you'd like to learn more about how to become a member or sponsor, it's easy. Start with a call to your public radio station. Public media runs on membership. Thank you for supporting this station with a donation today. This is Statewide News on Alaska Public Media.